questions here for you. You know, I have advocated for quite a while now, and a lot of people misunderstood it. They think it's some sort of reluctance to get involved. Some people actually think it's being afraid, but it's not. I've advocated for years that all we have to do is just basically sit back, take care of ourselves and the people we care about, because this is not a religious thing. I'm an atheist, so I'm not making this as a religious statement, but this society has become so corrupt and so decadent that it's going to collapse under its own weight. And we don't have to do a damn thing. We don't even have to kick the door in. It's just going to go down. And all we have to do is, we're in a really strange position now where we are appearing as the voices of sanity and reason. We speak softly, quietly, rationally, and let these other idiots on both sides scream hysterically through the violence, through things that are going to get themselves locked up in jail. There is nothing, well, at least very few things worthwhile that we could do that would be worth ending up in a federal prison or even in a county lockup. As I said, sit back, behave yourself, take care of yourself and the people you care about. Don't overdo it. There's anything more you do, you're just feeding the beast. And then when it collapses, all these sheep are going to need somebody to show them the way to enlightenment. And that's what we do. And we will have built up our reserves and our ability to do so, and that's it. Well, Tom, you take care, be safe, and enjoy the coming milder weather.
The way the Jewish press is hyping, super hyping, all these clashes and confrontations and between the cops and the blacks and the minorities, or the maybe it's Hispanic cops that are shooting blacks, and they twist and turn it and say it's white cops, but they're hyping this clash that's going on. Well, it's been going on, but now they're doing it. Why are they doing it? I have a funny feeling. Back in the 80s, Spotlight newspaper was claiming that the Jews were going to, oh, this is back in the 80s when they were made that conquering rush into Lebanon and almost took, Yasser Arafat and everything. And they were right on. They said this was happening. And then you had those guys, you had the Tylenol murders, and that happened right before that. There was a lot of conspiracy theorists, like in the Liberty Bell, people that wrote, they said that that's what this was. This was the throw the attention of the world, and especially America, off from what the Jews were going to do. They were going to go do the final kill of Yasser Arafat and his people. Well, anyways, now you got this Bibi coming over here, and he's talking about Israel can't take it anymore. We'll reach our last straw. This is a fight for our life. It's going to be, or something like that. I think, and with this black Muslim president we got, he's trying to be like Kennedy, or more so than Kennedy, be more favorable to the Muslims. Kennedy wanted to be fair to the Middle East. He didn't want the Jews to have the atom bomb. You know, and but this guy, he seems to be trying to give more leeway to Iran. He probably, I don't know if he's sincere or not. He wants to get get a good deal going where there will be peace there. But they're saying they're at odds with the administration. He spoke before the Congress, this Bibi, and then who knows what they're going to do? But they're building this shit up and making the blacks crazy against the cops and white people in general. That's what the Jewish press is doing. They did that with George Zimmerman. It wasn't even white. They said he was white and he killed that poor innocent black guy. No, you know he wasn't white. But anyways, they just might set him up, the guy in the White House, for a Kennedy deal. And the first thing that'll happen, the Jewish press will say it was a white racist, white supremacist group, or somebody, some patsy, somebody that'll get, and the blacks, they ain't going to listen to any reason. and they're going to burn every city down where they predominate of any considerate number. And then the Jews are going to bomb the shit out of Iran. They're going to bomb the shit out of Iran, and that might start World War III if it's true that the connections between Iran, the relations with Iran, associations, Iran and Russia and China. And China's going to have their little pit bull with them, North Korea. But anyways, it might get really hot. And the hot in Cleveland, I know Detroit's going to get wiped out in the first strike. If they start launching the atom bombs or the H-bombs, we're going to get it. Well, obviously, I'm from Detroit. This is Pat from Detroit, your old buddy. And God bless you, Tom, for changing the message, finally. All right, have a good one and good day.
Yeah, boys and girls, there's a couple of calls that came in on the other phone line. That is 641-715-3800. Then you put in the code 56890#, and that'll get you the message there. And I'm going to try to change it every day. I may not succeed, but I'm going to try. I just put a new message on a few minutes ago. Well, is he gone yet? Is BB gone? I'm afraid to go outside. The Jewish Defense League might be hiding behind my sign that says, BB, go home. Yeah, right. Hey, let's see. This is Thursday. Yeah, Thursday, and it's the March 5th, 2015. We got a full moon out there, I believe. Yeah, according to my Frank Silva Memorial clock. I can always tell because if it's a clear night and in the wee hours of the morning and I don't have the curtains drawn on my bedroom, that big old moon comes shining right through. Yeah. And then I start growling like a werewolf and running around the house. And my gal says, "Get the hell back to bed, you crazy man." Thank you, people who are getting your donations in for the radio so early. I appreciate that. And also, that'll mean I can go down to the post office and get me some money orders for some of the POWs. Yeah. Well, yeah, if you want to get a message to me pretty quick, and if I check it every day, that 641-715-3800... will be a good number. Put in the code again, 56890#, and I'll answer you some way if you give me your email address, or if you give me your phone number, we'll go from there. Well, I see that Plastic Man's going to be on TV on Al Jazeera Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Mr. David Duke. So you've got Al Jazeera on your service. You can see what the right wing's up to. Talk about being screwed up. Around 2010. Hold it a minute here. Turn off my... Okay, around 2010, Pavel Klimenko started noticing curious brands of clothing gaining popularity with Kiev upper middle class. The hoodies and shirts weren't especially fashionable. They were covered with garish Nordic imagery, like a wolf howling at the moon. And I didn't know wolves were either right or left wing, and fit into the macho style favored by many Ukrainian men. But Klimenko, an activist who monitors the extreme right in European football, recognized the name often emblazoned on the clothes in Gothic letters, Thor Steinar, two words that for the past decade have been synonymous with Germany's fascist fringe. These terms they throw around like nothing. I mean, it's unbelievable. You'd have to talk to these people to find out what they really were, what they stand for. previously had been worn by Ukrainian neo-Nazis who want to show off, he says. Now it was becoming popular among wealthy people. Klimenko learned that Thor Steiner had just opened a Kiev store in Dreamtown, an upscale mall co-owned by a flashy, Jewish businessman. Oh, Christ. The mall features a large-scale model of King Kong and hosts popular global brands like Zara and United Colors of Benetton to many shoppers. Thor Steiner seems no different. Oh, there's more here. It's interesting. It was attracting random customers who didn't have a clue about the history of the brand. Klimenko says, before long he started noticing cheap Thor Steiner knockoffs in the city's chaotic street markets. Enter the Chinese. You could see really bad fakes on people who couldn't afford the originals. At a glance, Thor Steiner is easily confused with mainstream pseudo-collegiate clothing brands like Ariel Postal and Abercrombie & Fitch, but the company has often used its designs what appear to be subtle Nazi references, such as Messerschmitt aircraft or Germanic runes. Well, that definitely makes them a neo-Nazi. The label has helped transform the style and culture of the European far right, and in recent years attempted something even more disconcerting, a shift into the mainstream of Eastern European fashion. Oh boy. Over the past decade and a half, Thor Steiner has gone from a small business patronized by German neo-Nazis into a multi-million dollar clothing chain with a presence throughout Europe. You think they could accomplish that if the Jews weren't in on it? They'd get them shut down in a week. In the early years after German reunification, members of the extreme right were generally easy to identify, with shaved heads, bomber jackets, and military boots. I guess that's all the right wing ever was in Germany. I think there's quite a few people over there that are thinking that way, that wear business suits. They favored brands like Lonsdale, Fred Perry, and New Balance, whose logos, the N on the New Balance sneakers, for example, could be repurposed as references to Nazism. By the early 2000s, these brands had distanced themselves from their far-right customers, and public blowback had made it harder for skinheads to function in everyday life. This created a dilemma for neo-Nazis. If the skinhead look was out, how were they supposed to identify each other? Well, they don't. They could be lone wolves. In 1999, Axel Kopelke, a secretive man with no known connection to the extreme right, founded Thor Steiner in Königs Wusterhausen, a small town near Berlin. Like other parts of former East Germany, Königs Wusterhausen is sleepy and gray, with train tracks cutting through its center and a short main street lined with boxy buildings. The area has long been one of Germany's hotbeds for neo-Nazi activity. After the fall of Berlin, many of its factories closed down, leaving a generation of men with few professional prospects. Many turned to right-wing politics, blaming their misfortunes on outsiders. Of course, it's never the fault of outsiders. Outsiders are wonderful. Insiders are bad neo-Nazis. German law forbids the overt use of Nazi symbols. But Thor Steiner pushed the limits. Its logo, an upwards-pointed arrow with a zigzag and two small dots, closely resemble two illegal Nazi symbols. A German court banned the logo in 2004. We'll show those dirty neo-Nazis. But Thor Steiner won a reversal 4 years later. Some of the company's t-shirts flash slogans like Ski Heil or Desert Fox. Oh, that's definitely neo-Nazi. both of which read like coy riffs on Third Reich terms. It also has an entire line called Nordmark, the name of a Nazi concentration camp and sports division. The company says its name refers to Norwegian adventurers Thor Heyerdahl, but many observers also see an allusion to Felix Steiner, a former Nazi general who played a key role in the expansion of the Waffen-SS. Other items of the Thor Steiner clothing flaunt, Viking symbols that feed neo-Nazi fantasies about racially superior Northern European folk, when we all know they're racially inferior Northern European folk, and a reference of the American Confederacy. Oh boy. That was a losing situation too, in the end. Thor Steiner has never been obviously political, says Patrick Schroeder, a prominent German neo-Nazi. But they knew if they used the Nordic designs, neo-Nazis would be a target group. So that's why he teamed up with a Jew to help him with the money and financing. It was an ice-cold political economic calculation, and it worked out for them. Hey, smart guys, man. The company spokesman, Rainier Schmidt, says that Thor Steiner was merely inspired by the need for wearable streetwear that is suitable for everyday use, that's all, and is motivated by lucrative market shares, not politics. Is there any difference? Regardless, by the mid-2000s, the brand had become a staple of Germany's right-wing scene, with customers happy to with customers happy to shell out £40 for a T-shirt. £40 for a T-shirt, how much is that in dollars? And €85 for a hoodie. Well, €40 can't be too far from $40. I wouldn't give $40 for a T-shirt that Uncle Adolf wore. Thor Steiner was the first to commercialize far-right identity, unquote, says Cynthia Miller Idris, an associate professor at American University who has studied the German extreme right. I understand her and Mo run around together. It took it from something that would be homemade in someone's garage to a really expensive, high-quality clothing invested by Jews and neo-Nazis. So the right wing always turns around and screws up. That's why you don't want to be in the right wing. It's just, it's so manipulated and false flagged, it's ridiculous. Thor Steiner grew even as the ranks of Germany's extreme right stayed relatively stable. By 2007, the company had several physical storefronts across Germany. I wonder who's financing those stores. That same year, hackers revealed it was raking in almost €2 million in annual revenue. It can't be one of us. We can't rake in anything. They ran their label very smartly from an economical standpoint, says Manja Kasten, who works at a German anti-neo-Nazi organization. Quote, so they had a secure core of clients who use it to identify one another. Boy, that's smart. Also smart for the cops. They can identify you too.
I didn't think of that, Sieg Heil.
Soon regular Germans learned to recognize neo-Nazis by their Thor Steiner clothing too, spurring widespread protests. Take off that shirt. We don't want you wearing that shirt walking down our street. You're a neo-Nazi, including frequent vandalism of Thor Steiner's stores, which raised their insurance. Many football stadiums, government buildings, and schools banned the clothing. Yeah, it's like the guys that used to wear KKK t-shirts to school. But the backlash only deepened customers' loyalty to the brand. Well, they can always figure that for the right wing. Yeah, they'll do it every time. you try to knock it out and they'll gravitate to it. If they really stomp down on the Star David, I swear I think the right wing would adopt the Star David. Attend a far wing event in Germany today and you'll often find yourself swimming in a sea of Thor Steiner. Boy, they're showing them. They're really moving out. They'll be taking over the government anytime soon. On a recent Monday night in northeastern Berlin, for example, several hundred people gathered outside a shopping mall to protest a proposed refugee shelter, a reflection of Germany's recent uptick in xenophobic hysteria. There's thousands and thousands of non-whites pouring into Germany. We shouldn't be resisting them. That should be okay, because they're just trying to get a better life. Many of the men were wearing the Thor Steiner hoodies and jackets, and one muscle-bound marcher sported a notorious sweatshirt featuring a machine gun and threatening slogan. So we called out the National Guard, or Germany's type of National Guard. Home visits. For 2.5 hours, the crowd blasted rock music and peed on front yard lawns. I can understand that. As an organizer spoke via loudspeaker, refugees, he said, were destroying the fabric of German neighborhoods. Well, I'm sure they are, but they're not too far ahead of a lot of these right-wingers, because, well, we won't go into that. Inevitable, a company chasing a lucrative market share needs to attract new customers. And Thor Steiner has proven no exception in 2008 in a development that caught many by surprise. The company was sold to Dubai non-white-based conglomerate and Mohammed M. Awada, a non-white Arab man, became the CEO. The move was greeted with calls for a boycott on the xenophobic far right, further fueled by customers' discovery that Thor Steiner manufactures its clothing in China and Turkey. I thought we were talking about the Aryans here. According to Schmidt, Awada was helpful because of his production contracts, but in 2010 he was replaced as CEO by a Swiss man named Marco Waspi. We don't know whether he was white or not. Recent catalogs list Thor Steiner stores in the Czech Republic, Finland, Slovakia, the United Kingdom, among other countries, as well as 13 locations in Moscow alone, though some belong to third-party vendors. Those are logical places to go, Miller Idress says. If the company is looking for markets that they think they may be interested in clothing in some sort of far-right ideological connection. The brand also expanded its collection to include swimwear, children's apparel, and an assortment of accessories, including jewelry and a stuffed elk. We're on our way now, boys. We'll be in power any minute. Just put on those $40 t-shirts or 40 euro t-shirts and we'll march into the sunset. These product lines have been helping to bring new customers, many of whom are oblivious to the brand's political overtones. One Czech anti-fascist activist, who, like many of his peers, asked to remain anonymous out of concern for his safety. Man, if I say anything, they're going to kill me, says the biggest share of the customers in the Czech Republic is now older people and sporty types who wear it as a cool macho brand. In Slovakia, he says the brand has become popular among the metal and hip-hop fans. Hip-hop? I thought that was Negro music. This spring, the owner of the company's first UK store, located in largely Jewish North Finchley neighborhood in London, told The Independent that Thor Steiner wasn't a Nazi brand, but merely one of popular in East Europe. The company has also registered its trademark in the United States. Yeah! And according to Schmidt, is open to the idea of expanding there. In the Ukraine, at least, Thor Steiner has faced setbacks. Klimenko says the company's Dreamtown store closed last year. Wow, this is a long article about a t-shirt. As Thor Steiner looks to expand, the company faces growing competition for its original right-wing customer base. Both in Germany and abroad, Thor Steiner really had a trailblazing role, says Jacques Froschner, the editor of Netz Gegen Nazi, a Berlin blog that monitors the extreme right. That must be a boring job, monitoring the extreme right. Would you describe what extreme right means? While Thor Steiner still dominates the scene, a host of rival clothing companies with names like Eric and Sons, Ensgar, Arian, Fourth Time, and Reconquista have popped up in Germany in the last few years with similar, if rougher, look. Unlike the Thor Steiner, most of these brands are overt about their political affiliations. Ensgar Arian, for example, employs Schroeder, the prominent neo-Nazi, in a managerial capacity. In Eastern Europe, brands like Sava, Stona, White Rex, and Beloyar are filling the same niche. In Germany, Thor Steiner's mainstream appeal is limited by the fact that wearing its clothing in public remains the closest legal equivalent to wearing a swastika. Get that guy. Give him 6 months in jail. This strange tension is palpable at Berlin-only Thor Steiner store, which is located on a large thoroughfare in the city's Wannsee neighborhood. Its windows are covered up, likely because of the constant vandalism by left-wing activists. They're never left-wing thugs. It's a left-wing activist, and he is breaking your window because he loves humanity. But inside the store could easily be mistaken for a Gap. The wood flooring gleams, and the brand's sweaters are neatly arranged on white shelving. During a recent visit, the store's one working employee was skittish while discussing the brand, seemingly wary of revealing too much. When asked where Thor Steiner comes from, he took a long pause. Norway, he said, before changing the topic to the weather. Well, that was written by a guy named Thomas Rogers, a writer living in Berlin. And I'm just so happy about it. I mean, it's great. All the right-wingers got some kind of a T-shirt that identifies them to the cops. Duh! And they pay twice as much as they would need to pay for it. Duh! And the older neo-Nazis, you know, like the Cardos and those people, they're going to promote this kind of stuff. Yeah. Nothing ever changes. Well, maybe we can find something that's a little more exciting. That article was boring as shit. I think skinheads should just take a felt pen and put a swastika on their chest. Don't go with a shirt at all. And then they'd have more money for beer. You know, I wish Netanyahu, Nitwit, as I lovingly call him, I wish he'd come to the United States once a week. I wish he'd speak in the Congress once a week. Be the best thing that ever happened to what I want to happen in this country. Be the best thing that I would want to happen in Israel as his left wing gets stronger and stronger and stronger, and may kick him out in this election coming up in the next few days, I guess. Worse is better, boys and girls. Yeah, bring old Nitwit over here once a week and herd all those congressmen and senators in there. And when they line up afterwards, I hope they don't have to stay in the line too long to get up there where they can give Netanyahu oral sex. They didn't get through the whole line this last time. Maybe next time. Well, I see that all the blacks are jumping up and down to close down the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department. I think that would be good. Close it down for a month or so and let the chips fall where they may. Yeah, that would be interesting. I could see the town in flames after about a week. Yeah, they and these cops that sent out racial jokes on their email, idiots. That's the problem with these cops. There's so many white idiot cops. Now, when we've told you over and over, you're going to be a lone wolf, and you got a career in the police department or anything, FBI, CIA, you name it. You keep your mouth shut. You can be the most racist son of a bitch on the force, but don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Don't be silly like these guys do. And some of them even go out and join the Ku Klux Klan. I'm a bona fide member of the Ku Klux Klan. I can't understand why I got fired. So anyhow, everything's good in Ferguson because everything's going bad for the system. And I think that the Attorney General was smart enough not to charge the cop in question. He was afraid of getting a big backlash, which the Republicans would be pushing. Yeah, you know, the Southern strategy that coaxed all these white people in, that believing that their Southern strategy, the Republican Party, was going to take care of their interests and protect them from the niggers. Yeah, right. Well, they say that 85% of Ferguson, Missouri's police targets are black. Well, I mean, you know, there does seem to be a pretty high crime rate among the brothers. But that don't make any difference. One out of every two you stop on the street are going to be involved in some kind of criminality. But I don't think they should throw these guys in jail for having pot or cocaine. There was a black guy down in, what was it, Mississippi or someplace. He was riding his bicycle, and he got unstable, and he made a move, and he almost fell down on his bicycle, and the cops stopped him. They found two or three joints on him. Two or three. They tried him, convicted him, and gave him 13 years in a pen. I love those Christians down south. I don't want to be down there, man. Those Christian Zionist sons of bitches, man. They love the Lord but hate other people. They say they like black people, but they're making big money putting all these blacks in prison. And the police departments are living off the money and the fines they get from these blacks. Blacks are, you know, they're partly right. Of course they are. And I wouldn't lose any sleep at all if they went bananas and burned down a police station or something. If I was getting the shaft like a lot of them are, I'd do it myself. Well, there's a $30,000 reward for information leading to the conviction of a bank robbery trio known as the Black Hat Bandits, suspected in a two-month string of robberies across Maryland and Virginia, latest coming Monday. They've earned their names for the black hats they wear during their heists, and the feds say they're becoming increasingly dangerous. That's because they're getting away with it. Yeah, that makes them more dangerous. In an escalation of violence, the Black Hat Bandits have become more brazen at each robbery, have threatened bank customers and tellers, most recently holding a gun to a customer's head and jumping teller counters in attempts to gain access to the bank vaults, according to the FBI wanted poster. Don't these people know that you can't make much money robbing banks anymore? You got to work on the inside of the bank. You got to be a computer guru. Yeah, you're not going to go after a few grand, take a million down, maybe 2 million, maybe 10 million. That's the way to rob a bank. An FBI statement last month provided more details. Quote, during each robbery, the Black Hat Bandits have been described as carrying handguns and wearing winter coats, sunglasses, black hats, either a winter knit cap or a wide-brimmed hat, and facial disguises such as ski masks or a fake beard. The bandits pull off their most recent robbery Monday during the lunch hour at a Wells Fargo bank in Falls Church, Virginia. It marked the crew's 8th bank robbery this year. We now confirm that this 3-person crew who will take over a bank and one who waits in a car, and an FBI spokesman told CNN affiliate WJLA. No one was injured in the holdup, which unfolded after 2 black-clad men, 1 African-American, 1 white, entered the bank. There, you see what diversity brings you? It causes people to become bank robbers. If they'd been both white, they wouldn't think of robbing the bank. Entered the bank with firearms, robbed the bank, and fled in a vehicle waiting outside, police told the station. Wow. Hours after the robbery, investigators were at the scene gathering evidence, which included a footprint in the snow. There you go. It was the 2nd Falls Church bank robbery in recent weeks, but in February 21st robbery of an Apple Federal Credit Union 2 blocks from Monday's crime scene was the work of a lone gunman, not the black hat bandits, authorities said. Yeah, there are bank robbers all over the place. People don't have a job, don't have any money. So they go out and rob banks, but please, if you run into one of them, tell them what I said. Just, you know, there's not enough money in robbing banks. Some of the banks don't even have any money. All they got is canceled checks. So they risk 20 years in jail, and they get what? 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, a few hundred. They're desperate, but they got to figure out a different way of getting big money. Well, I see a American politician, ambassador, I guess he was, got a knife stuck in his cheek over there in South Korea. Man, they don't play around. Take this, you bastard. I bet he cried all the way back on his airplane to safety of the United States. Oh, my God. I'll die. They sliced my face, man. This stuff is going to become far more common. There's going to be many, many more attempted assassinations on U.S. corporate leaders, politicians, all that. It's inevitable. It's inevitable. And there's really no way that all these highly vaunted security people and their organizations can stop it. Because it may be a lone wolf. You know, the lone wolf, man. Here was another article about Ferguson email with those cops. What a black man holds the job for 4 years. Anyhow, I'm not even going to read the punchline. I don't care. In its investigation of Ferguson, Missouri Police Department, the Justice Department said it found direct evidence of racial bias, of racism in the emails. I want to tell you something. If you go through all the emails of the FBI, CIA, and all the politicians in Washington, you'll find hundreds of racial jokes. If I was the NAACP, I'd demand an accounting of all these emails of these politicians and these federal law enforcement. Now, I'm telling you, they'll be full of tens of thousands of racial jokes. And at their parties? Yeah, right. I can't believe this. A former German legislator has confessed to downloading child porn from the internet and agreed to pay a $5,600 fine to bring his trial to an end. Boy, did he pay off somebody. $5,600? Quote, I realized that I had made a mistake. Yeah, you got caught. It took me long, and you're one of those guys that's chasing the neo-Nazis around. It took me a long time to realize that. I couldn't figure out, man, that I was making a mistake by unloading child porn. Former Social Democratic SPD lawmaker Sebastian Edithy said in a statement read out in court by his lawyer. You mean he didn't read it himself? Oh, wow. Isn't SPD a conservative right-wing party? Edithy, 45, agreed to pay the fine to the Child Protection Agency in the western German state of Lower Saxony for downloading the material into a parliamentary laptop. A parliamentary laptop. That's as bad as Hillary Clinton was downloading all the strategic information in her job as Attorney General into her own private at-home computer. Oh, but that's all right. She did it for a good cause. State prosecutors had claimed that Edithy had acquired child pornographic videos and pictures from the Internet in 2013. Once considered a rising star in the SPD, Edithy was forced to give up his parliamentary seat last year after investigators claimed that his name had appeared on the client list of a Canadian company that allegedly had been distributing child pornography. But he would never think of being a racist, and he loves to chase Nazis around. Edithy's decision to step down from the Bundestag following the claims resulted in the German government tightening the laws concerning child pornography. Yeah, you better check the rest of them, because I'm sure you got a bunch of them. Angela Merkel, I hear, downloaded them too. You can tell by the way she walks. She likes child pornography. Well, let's get over to our poetry corner again. Yeah. Chapter 4, Munich. To Munich, then, the city splendid, my highly artistic way I wended. There never was a city quainter or more attractive to a painter. In intervals of ladder scaling and decorating fence and paling, I planned a wiser man and sadder how to ascend the social ladder. Once more I saw the truth dismaying. The Austrian Empire was decaying. It was, according to my thinking, into a state of dotage sinking. A nation that is strong and free acknowledges no boundary. A nation should devote its labors to bullying its weaker neighbors. For man's most viral functions cease in periods of piping peace. And if you want a life exciting, 'tis only to be found in fighting. Timidity and self-conceit soon make a populace effete. And life is only truly thrilling when spent in musketeery and drilling. And reason's only active when, within the brains of common men, in every fat diplomatist, a simple simply ceases to exist. For he misleads the common herd in fashion that is quite absurd. They follow each Semitic viper, as Hamlin's children did the piper. A people, you must understand, does not, of course, connote a land. For Jews, although devoid of acres, are universal mischief makers. Yes, look wherever you may choose, you'll find bad ha-pennies and Jews. And commoner than fleas and ticks are Democrats and Bolsheviks. Hold on. I don't know. Is that one page or two? Well, I guess that's the end of that poem. How about another one here? You need another one, baby. The World War, Chapter 5. I used to sit and curse my fate because I had been born too late. In a commercial age, a hero is worth but little more than zero. By nature a determined stoic, I painted after deeds heroic. I panted after deeds heroic. When Archduke Francis Ferdinand was liquidated, it was grand. And when I learned we were at war, I knelt and prayed to mighty Thor, for I perceived I had a chance of freedom and deliverance. Inspired by notions such as these, I learned eyes right and stand at ease. I grew expert at marking time. My forming fours were quite sublime. I learnt in my desire to fight the difference between twixt left and right, but never could remember long the difference twixt right and wrong. I loved my military appointment. The only fly within the ointment was fear that ere I saw a trench, we should have finished with the French. At last my training was completed. Behold me now in troop train seated. Bedecked with boots and field-gray tunic, I left my friendly town of Munich. Thanks to my prowess and my cunning, my job was regimental running. It also was a little later to act as a regimental waiter. With equally heroic mates, I washed up saucers, cups, and plates. With freedom's other gallant warders, I handed round battalion orders. I took 12 poilus single-handed, and so the Iron Cross I landed. At least I did, I think. At least I think I did. Me seems 'twas only in the land of dreams. There you go. Yeah, that's a cute little poem. Is Hillary a crook? Oh, that would make me a schnook. A deeper look into this week's revelations surrounding Hillary Clinton, ex-White House babe, use of private mail account while serving as U.S. Secretary of State suggests that such a breach of protocol allowed the prominent politician and presumed Democratic candidate for president to avoid having her communications accessed by those making records requests, including both members of Congress and journalists filing under the Freedom of Information Act and similar laws. No, 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 no. You can't have those. Those are my private ones. I keep them at the house. As the New York Times reports yesterday, Wednesday, Mrs. Clinton's aides on Tuesday sought to play down the significance of her exclusive use of a personal email account for State Department business. Ooh. But an examination of records requests sent to the department reveals how the practice protected a significant amount of her correspondence from the eyes of investigators and the public. Ooh. Mrs. Clinton exclusively used personal mail for her government business is unusual for a high-level official, archive experts have said. Federal regulations since 2009 have required that all emails be preserved as part of the agency's record-keeping system. In Mrs. Clinton's case, her emails were kept on her personal account and under the kitchen sink, and her staff took no steps to have them preserved as part of the State Department record. No, we don't want those guys to have. No, they're not going to have anything on me. According to the Times, the Associated Press is among the news outlets who say they submitted a Freedom of Information request for records relating to Mrs. Clinton's tenure in the State Department dating back to March 2010, but received no answer. The plot thickens. The State Department acknowledged on Tuesday that Clinton's private email account shielded her communications from being disclosed. About all that money she was taking in from all those countries. Talk about payola, baby. The news and culture site Gawker also reported that Clinton's email setup may explain why FOIA requests submitted by its journalists have gone unanswered and empty in recent years. In response to the latest developments, journalist and political commentator Glenn Greenwald, there's that guy, he's always messing around and where he shouldn't be, man. Yeah. Well, since she's so devious and so crooked and all that stuff together, she'd make a perfect president. That's what you want as a president. A lying son of a bitch. Willing to do anything for power. Just like that series I've been watching on House of Cards. That could be right out of today's newspaper. If you haven't watched House of Cards, you need to watch it. It's hilarious, man. And it gives you an idea of what I've been saying and other people have been saying for decades. They're all crooks. They're all corrupt. And the ones that aren't corrupt are dumb. So this political man at the top, he's going to go all the way, baby. That's the kind of man you need at the top. Just another Stalin, man. We need a guy like Stalin. And I think, Hillary Clinton, she looks a little bit like Stalin. Well, just like that rogue progressive guy, that liberal guy, he says we're going to go into a war pretty soon. They're going to put not only boots on the ground, they're going to put their asses on the ground, baby. And there we go. Just like in that movie, when I started loving the bomb, Peter Sellers. And at the end, all these atomic bombs are going off. And then, great, great news. Jesus is coming back. We've been waiting on him. And we'll give those Jews one more chance to accept the Lord Jesus Christ. If they don't, we're going to kill them all. Yeah. That is, if the Muslims haven't killed him before he gets here. Yeah, wow. Big headline, newly unveiled Texas school reform. Oh, jeez. Proposals are in step with right-wing agenda. The conservative education package proposed this week is a grab bag of failed ideas cribbed from the ALEC playbook, says Diane Ravitch. Yeah, shows a bunch of people out in front of some building. Save our Texas schools. Well, you're way too late to save your Texas schools with all those Christian Zionists interfering with the curricula. Forget it. You're not going to save it. Nobody's learning anything. They're going to be dumber than a stone, man. Yeah, I'm afraid so. If you let those right-wing Jesus freaks get a hold of your school system, forget it. Well, let's see what the corporations are up to here. Conservatives need to figure out where they stand on local power. When they say conservative, say that's corporatist. Yeah. Might as well say corporatist. Their views present a paradox, suggested the New York Times recently. Causing confusion are the so-called preemptive laws passed by states to stop local governments from enacting their own policies. Wouldn't want that. Hell, that's something. That sounds like democracy. Demonocracy. Eight states have passed laws scuttling local sick day rules. More have sought to preempt local regulations on things like local contracting, big box retailing, and nonviolent drugs. Most doggedly, the well-endowed National Restaurant Association has worked to block cities from raising restaurant workers' wages. You wouldn't want a guy working in a hamburger stand to be able to have a living wage, would you? The business lobby's cabal, the American Legislative Exchange Council, has made passing preemption laws a priority. The Republican-dominated state legislators have gone all out, even as they jaw on about conservative values and individual liberty. Those filthy Republicans. They're so bad. Don't tread on me and the evils of big government. Yeah, right. Yeah. What about big evils of big business who manipulate big government? Hence the quandary. Curious, are conservatives for local control or against it? The answer a lot more simple. Big business sees the writing on the wall. Even citizens in the red states like Alaska, Arkansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota voted overwhelmingly for raising minimum wage last time around. Take that, corporations. Philadelphia recently became the 20th place in the states to enact a law guaranteeing workers paid sick days. Oh no. Oh, it's the end of the world. Gonna have to sell my Rolls Royce. In the same month, after rallies and protests of thousands of emails from state residents, New York's Governor Cuomo announced a raise for his state's 400,000 tipped workers. Cuomo knows a popular move when he sees it. Yeah, jump on the bandwagon, baby. Especially given the deadlock in D.C., voters want local government to take power back from the far-off legislators and corporations. Well, they wouldn't do that, would they? So it's no wonder that groups like the NRA and ALEC have turned cold on the local power and big on big government pre-exemption. Paradoxical? Not really. When it comes to government, we've bought a myth that there's a high moral principles at stake, big or small, federal or local, as the unseemingly hypocrisy over the preemption laws reveals. The fight's really over power, and politicians, especially conservative ones, will squirm through no end of contradictions to keep their hands on it. That's what it's all about, boys and girls. It's all power. It's all power. Like I say, you should watch that House of Cards. If you want to see really the way it is, that's pretty close to the way it is being. Yeah. You know, when any big shot military buffoon says there's not going to be any boots on the ground, well, what they say is they don't rule out boots on the ground. Well, that means you can take it to the bank. There's going to be boots on the ground. So if you got any 18-year-old males or females in your family, you better ship them to Outer Mongolia and stay out of the damn war. If you have to, you might have to break a leg. Yeah. I'm serious. Keep them out of these bloodbaths. Well, Noam Chomsky, and of course he is Jewish, but that doesn't mean every Jew lies all the time. There are some that tell the truth. Said that NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden is a true patriot who revealed vast surveillance programs that have nothing to do with combating terrorism. I agree, Noam. You're right, baby. The noted intellectual made the comment at an extended interview with Democracy's Now! Amy Goodman, which aired Tuesday. Another red communist outfit. Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me get this down here. Chomsky said Snowden should be welcomed back into the country from Russia. And Tommy says he should be received by brass bands and laurels around his head, where he has received asylum with honors because he carried out the obligations of a citizen. You better believe it. He is a hero. To me, he's a hero. Not to Dick Cheney or George Bush. So I hate to even mention those two guys' names. It makes me ill every time I do, man. I got my two dolls here, Cheney and Bush, and I keep putting pins in them, but I haven't made much advancement so far. But I'm going to keep doing it, baby. It's the people in government who should be on trial, not him, he continued. Of course, but how are you going to do that? Everybody keeps talking about all the crooks in Washington, all the crooks in everywhere, the State Department, you name it. But that's all they do, or maybe have a little march. No, you need revolution, baby. You need civil war, baby. And without some kind of violent action, nothing will ever change. You'll just be sitting there griping and crying and whining all the time, and nothing happens. Chomsky added that neither the surveillance systems known and exposed nor the drone program, despite claims by officials, have combating terrorism as their goals. I heard a woman on TV talking about she was into that drone stuff and how she sent missiles into these houses and blew men, women, and children into 1,000 pieces. She said, I did it because it was my duty. Someday it's going to be somebody's duty to... Well... I won't get into that. NSA programs are intended to control the population, he said. No shit. As for Obama's drone program, Chomsky called it a global assassination program that is far and away the worst act of terror in the world. Of course. You know, they scream about this ISIS. Well, these are the results of all kinds of warfare against those people, and so they come together into this ISIS, and so they do violent things, just like has been done to them for decades. Echoing comments many, including Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai, and even the CIA have made, he said the drone program is also counterproductive. Of course it is. They're never going to stop hating the United States, these people that are bombed and missiled and blown to bits in their family. Forget it. It'll be 100 years. They'll still be hating the United States. They won't be worrying about Adolf Hitler in World War II. That'll all go by the wayside. It's a terror-generating program that has helped fuel the rise of Al-Qaeda. Yeah, but you got to understand, it's not terror-generated program if they got a license. Now, you get a license from the government, and you can do all the terror you want. If you don't, you're a terrorist. If you do, you're unconventional warfare people. It's okay. You can kill as many as you want as long as you get a license. No license, you go to jail. There was a small group up in the tribal areas of mostly Pakistan and Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda, and we have succeeded in spreading it over the whole world. Well, I think that was the plan. The sinister plan behind the whole thing was to spread this thing everywhere, to regime change, to knock out every government in the Middle East, and create this massive Islamic, I won't call it terror, I'll call it I'll call it unconventional warfare, guerrilla warfare. Now they're all everywhere. You know, West Africa, Southeast Asia is simply generating more and more terror. And I think it's not the U.S. is trying to generate terror. It's simply that it doesn't care, Chomsky said. Watch the interview below. Well, let's see here. See if we got time. I don't think that we do.
Is planning to impose on U.S. citizens the same restrictions that the United States imposes on Venezuelans. Why do we impose those restrictions? Suppose, say, that Iran was sending people to the United States to foment opposition to the government and a call for change in the regime. How would we react to that? Unimaginable. But we consider it our right to do that elsewhere. Incidentally, this is not a justification of Venezuelan actions. The fact that we do it doesn't make it justified. If others do it, no, it's not justified. Venezuela has severe internal problems. There's no doubt about that.
What is your assessment of Maduro and how he compares to President Chavez?
Well, Chavez had charisma and popular support, an appeal that
Maduro
doesn't
have. Now we
got to
go forward a little bit.
But there is a
Venezuela.
Can raise this question, but it's academic because they are not preventing terrorism.
You know, that reminds me, the other day I went to a gas station. I forget the name of it. It was supposed to be owned by Venezuela. And I got filled up my car, my truck. And I went in, I said, where's the bathroom? She said, we have no public bathrooms. And I said, that does it. I'm going to write my friend in the government down in Venezuela and tell him about this. The woman looked at me like I'd lost my mind. And maybe I had, because I had to pee.
And or others was that these NSA programs had stopped, I think they said, 54 or so acts of terror. Gradually, when the press started asking questions, it was whittled down to about 12. Finally, it came down to one. And that act of terror was a man who had sent, I think, $8,500 to Somalia. That's the yield of this massive program. So, and it is not intended to stop terrorism. It's intended to control the population. That's quite different. You have to be very cautious in accepting claims by power systems. They have no reason to tell you the truth. And you have to look and ask, well, what is the truth? And this system is not a system for protecting terrorism. Actually, you can say the same about the drone assassination program. That's a global assassination program, far and away the worst act of terror in the world. It's also a terror-generating program, and they know it from high places. You can find quotation after quotation where they know it. I take this one case that I mentioned before, this child who was murdered in a drone strike, and after having watched his family burned to death by drone strikes.
In Yemen.
What's the effect of of this on people? Well, it's to create terror. Close analyses have shown that that's exactly what happens. A very important book by Akbar Ahmed, is a well important anthropologist who's a Pakistani who studies tribal systems. He'd worked in the Northwest Territories and so on, and it's called The Thistle and the Drone. And he goes through in some detail the effect on tribal societies of simply murdering, from their point of view, just murdering people at random. The drone attacks, remember, are aimed at people who are suspected of maybe someday wanting to harm us. I mean, suppose, say, that Iran was killing people in the United States and Israel who they thought might someday want to harm them. They could find plenty of people. Would we consider that legitimate? It's, again, we have the right to carry out mass murder of suspects who we think might harm us someday. How does the world look at this? How do the people look at this in this village where this child was, who said that they're terrorized by constant drone strikes all over northwest Pakistan? That's true. Now it's over most of the world. The U.S. so-called war against terror has been a smashing success. There was a small group up in the tribal area areas of mostly Pakistan, Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda. We have succeeded in spreading it over the whole world. Now they're all everywhere. You know, West Africa, Southeast Asia, simply generating more and more terror. And I think it's not that the U.S. is trying to generate terror. It's simply that it doesn't care.
I wanted to ask you about Syriza in Greece, a movement that started as a grassroots movement. Now that
that's all we have time for today. Yeah, let me turn this audio down here a little bit. I get too excited about audio. I keep wanting to turn it up, baby, because that gives me power. Power, like Dick Cheney. Yeah. Okay, 14:05. I'll be back tomorrow, and I hear it's Freya's Day. And I think I've got a request for a song for tomorrow. So I believe it's coming from merchandiseresist@yahoo.com. So I need to get it in here. So anyhow, that's it. We'll see you later. And don't worry, it's going to get worse. Get worse for the system. Your job is to stay out of the way of the system. Let them. They're going to do whatever they're going to do until this whole thing comes down. And maybe after it comes down and the dust clears, we can recreate something here. But for now, forget it.
There ain't no man gonna invade my territory. There ain't nobody out there gonna mess with me. 'Cause I'm big and hard and battle scarred and getting long in the tooth. Desperate and hungry and got nothing to lose. Like to shoot at me, but they miss. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf, and I ain't never been trapped. And God help the people that think they've got me cornered at last. I've been running since I was 3. Born in Louisiana swamp, moved with the pack to Tennessee. Raised by black and white dogs to some country, some rock and roll. They said, now boy, you don't have to quit your howl.